let's talk first about peace.
Determined to make peace with Israel's enemies, risking personal well-being and political popularity, the respected warrior, peacemaker, Yitzhak Rabin was laid to rest amid great sorrow, the victim of an Israeli political assassin. Where does the Middle East go from here? With Prime Minister Rabin gone, is peace still in the cards? Could he have achieved it had he lived? And now, Garner Ted Armstrong.
Like so many people, I was very privileged to have known Yitzhak Rabin, the Prime Minister of Israel, who was recently assassinated. And like so many others, having known him, I was moved to tears and a deep shock and grief when I saw what had happened. I remembered the times with him when I had shared the podium before students at Ambassador College, when I had fielded questions and answers about situations in the Middle East. I remember so well having lunch with him, having talked to him at great length in my office. And I remember very well, and I'm going to show you excerpts and even give you a tape if you wanted of that interview, when I went over to Jerusalem and interviewed him just prior to his re-election for the second time as the Prime Minister of Israel. Everything that everyone said about him was true. A shy man, a very genuine man. To have known him for only a few minutes, there was some kind of an electric magnetic bond. You just genuinely liked the man. A warrior, a man who had started out in the Palmach, a man who had actually defended Jerusalem against the siege in 1948 when that armored train finally made it through with the foodstuffs that you've probably seen in historical movies. A man who led a brigade, who actually helped defend that city. A man later on who became what was called the Ramatkal, or their version of our Colin Powell, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who was a soldier, who became a general, who was prime minister of his people twice, and who at great personal risk to himself was trying incrementally, little by little, to implement a peace process in the Middle East by granting Palestinian Arabs certain degrees of autonomy, by actually dismantling and moving out some of the Jewish settlements that had been such a terrible point of contention for so many years, because the Arabs were screaming that settlement means, that occupation means annexation. The settlement was actually, and of course Sharon wanted that to happen, was putting Jewish settlements all up and down the West Bank and all up on the Golan Heights and even down into the Negev, because they wanted to claim the spoils of war from the 67 Six-Day War for Israel. When you put all of this into perspective, which I will do for you in the materials I'm going to offer, and which we do continually in 20th Century Watch, the magazine of this organization, which does exactly what it says, and has a segment in it called Jerusalem Watch. We have focused in upon Jerusalem because Jerusalem is the city of the Bible. It is the city where the three greatest monotheistic religions come together. Jerusalem is the city where Abraham almost sacrificed his son, Yitzhak, and to which President Clinton made reference in the moving speech that was delivered as the heads of state from all over the world gathered for the funeral. Jerusalem was the city of David and Solomon. It is the city of Ezra and the Maccabees, the city of Solomon's Temple and the later Herodian Temple. It was also a city of Jesus Christ, of the site of his death, burial, and resurrection, a site of the beginning of the New Testament church. It was also the site from which Muslims believe Muhammad rose to heaven. And Jerusalem has been the focal point of contention, of violence, of murder, and a protracted war from time immemorial. In that interview of some time ago with Prime Minister, the late now Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, he mentioned that all people in the area seem to really want peace, at least from his point of view. He said that, and I want you to now hear what he said in that interview.
Many people in the region, Arabs, Jews, Christians, hope that there will be opening to bring about a different, more stable, more peaceful Middle East. But the real problem is to bring about peace.
A very hopeful statement indeed, but unfortunately, when you think about Hamas and Hezbollah financed by Iran, when you think of the Islamic Jihad, when you think of all of the people murdered, assassinated, bombed to bits, women and children and buses mangled by terrorist bombs ever since that day when this man, who was such a son of Israel, who was a Sabra, who was the first homegrown Israeli prime minister, a general and a man of war, but a man who grew to detest war as only perhaps warriors can, and was striving with all that was in him for peace, even on the basis of trading territory for peace, which caused bitter enemies from within. Yes, there were people who wanted peace, but not Iran, not Iraq, and not some of the neighbors around him, including Syria. And, of course, when you look back at the Gulf War and you realize the incredible, remarkable restraint that was used by the Israeli government at that time, when the Israeli Air Force was aloft, when they were circling around, and you do not want to doubt for a minute what was in the bomb bays and under the wings of some of those aircraft, when the first Scuds began crashing down on Tel Aviv, I thought, and I told my family, this is it. This is the beginning of a nuclear exchange. They are going to go over there and turn those people in Iraq and Baghdad into so much glass. Little did I know, the red phone was ringing, that President Bush was pleading with them to hold off. We sent the Patriot batteries over there. It's all history now. And the remarkable restraint where people were being killed, and one lady actually died as a result of even trying to put her gas mask on. And all of that horror, I went over there shortly after that time. And the bomb craters and the destroyed apartments and everything from the Scuds were still there. And it was an incredible thing. And yet they used that restraint. Here Israel won the Sinai in the 67 Six-Day War. And then, after they had developed those oil wells, gradually decided to give it back. They abandoned Sharm el-Sheikh. They abandoned the bulk of the Sinai. And they gave to Egypt all of the development of the oil production capacities of the Sinai, which made Egypt not only self-sufficient in oil, but able to export oil. And it seemed like the world took no notice. Talk about trading land for peace. Those people over there have wanted peace, but each wants it in his own way. The only way the Hamas can have it, the Hezbollah can have it, the only way many Syrians and Saudi Arabians and people in other Gulf sheikdoms, and the only way the people in Iran and the Islamic fundamentalists in all of those countries, including some of those in Jordan and Egypt, even though right now the leaders of Jordan and Egypt are trying to effect a process that will lead toward peace in the Middle East, there are plenty of people who are rabid with their hatred and their virulence toward Israel, and who will never be happy until the last Jew is exterminated from the face of the earth. Now, to that point, I asked rather a profound question, perhaps a little bit of an embarrassing question, about a Samson complex, and I'll come back and talk about it in just a moment, but it had to do with pulling down the temple of humanity, and I put this question to former or the late Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin. Here's what he said.
I wouldn't be negative in my approach. I believe the existence of Israel is not to die with our enemies like Samson did. Our purpose is to be strong enough to survive.
My question to almost then Prime Minister Rabin, who was running for office and about to be reelected, was based upon a news report of an American journalist who was actually interviewing an Israeli general in the Air Force. They were in an aircraft coming in for a landing and orbiting over Jerusalem. And he had made the comment that never again will we Jews be led away like so many sheep in the cattle cars to the extermination camps. Before we Jews would ever have something like the Holocaust happen to us again, we would pull down the temple of humanity. Now that said it all to me. When I read that news report, like blinded Samson, who in the last moments of his life pulled down the building, and it said in the Bible, therefore those that he took with him in death were more than all those that he killed during his life. It meant to me what I have known for decades, that the Israeli government has produced nuclear weapons and that they have a nuclear arsenal. It's been guessed by our intelligence agencies and military that they may have as many as 100 thermonuclear warheads, that they could have turned Baghdad into glass, and that they could do the same to other Middle Eastern capitals in a time of such extremis for the Israeli people that it looked like massive percentages of their populations may die. As Ramatkal, or the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and as a young brigade commander and a soldier in the Israeli army, as a matter of fact, he met his wife, Hannah, who was I should not say Hannah, that is not her name, but met her when he was in the army, and she was a young Israeli soldier, because of course their women are in the army as well. And he made the statement that never again did he want them to have to defend Israel against a kind of a narrow, like a 12-mile waste from where the Arabs were up by Latrun all the way to the Mediterranean Sea. That never again should a chief of staff have to try to defend Israel as he did during the 1976 Six-Day War. Here's what he said.
No future chief of staff of the armed forces of Israel will have to defend Israel from the lines that existed prior to the Six-Day War.
The trouble is that Prime Minister Rabin's enemies from within Israel and the Labor Party, the Likud, and the people who are the loyal opposition are saying and accusing, and it's obviously that they have a point to make, that it wasn't those from without that they need worry about with a formal signing of a peace agreement with Jordan's King Hussein and with ongoing negotiations that they thought would be very, very hopeful right up until the moment of the assassin's bullet that took away Yitzhak Rabin. They were going to negotiate, and as a matter of fact, Christopher was over there only a matter of days or a week or so before the assassination to try to set up those negotiations with Assad of Syria to try to bring about some mutual security arrangements between the Syrian armed forces and the Israeli armed forces so there could be a gradual withdrawal from the Golan Heights. But the opposition within Israel was not pointing to Arabs from without. They were saying the PLO, with the inflammatory rhetoric of Yasser Arafat, who has been widely published in some of these inflammatory Middle Eastern publications and other nations, that they intend to claim Jerusalem as the capital of a new Palestinian state, and that they will never rest until the last Jew is driven into the sea. There was all of this rhetoric, and of course so many people in Israel thought that the next enemy is from within. Not without some degree of merit, they were saying that if we do this, if we allow a Palestinian police force, if we allow Palestinian Arabs to carry arms, if we allow this thing in Jericho and the Gaza Strip to develop, there will be a nation in the midst of a nation which will be a protracted enemy and will be seeking to foment our overthrow continually. These, then, are some of the elements that are at work right now. Will Acting Prime Minister Shimon Peres continue with the slain Yitzhak Rabin's policies? Will Benjamin Netanyahu of the opposition succeed in being elected, or has the assassination so wounded the spirit of Israelis that they will turn away in disgust because of what they're saying was such inflammatory rhetoric from the other side? Well, the future, believe it or not, is revealed in the pages of biblical prophecy. I have three things I want to offer you that actually have a great deal to do with what is going on in Jerusalem. Will a temple soon be built in Jerusalem? I'll come back and discuss why a lot of people think it will, including many Jewish organizations, including some of the very right-wing religious organizations inside Israel, and many of them in the United States, and including Protestant evangelicals and many American religious organizations who think a third temple is going to be built. They think a new Levitical priesthood is going to be established, and they think that sacrifices are going to begin. Then what is this mysterious prophecy that I'll come to a moment and show you at home, where Jesus said that the trigger which will bring about a time of great calamity, of great warfare, called the Great Tribulation in the Middle East, will be something called an abomination of desolation standing in the holy place, something that is despicable and abominable in God's sight, which brings about waste, chaos, destruction, and desolation. And it's called the abomination of desolation in the Olivet Prophecy. Then there's a special historical gift to you, absolutely free of charge, by the way. No price now, no price ever. I want to send you a copy of my interview with Yitzhak Rabin. I want to take this time out, give you a chance to get the address and the telephone number, and I'll be right back.
Will a temple soon be built in Jerusalem? Bible prophecy clearly indicates that a Jewish temple will play a role in events that lead to the end time. But Islamic mosques currently occupy the Temple Mount.
The Temple Mount must be again as it was in the past. By the will of God, the third temple will be built again.
Will a third temple be built? It's destined to be one of the most explosive issues of our time. It would mean the dismantling or destruction of two shrines holy to the religion of Islam.
the third temple must be built on this place.
Where the Dome of the Rock sits.
Yes.
The Al-Aqsa Mosque is also in the way.
Yes.
And yet, Bible prophecy makes it plain that a third temple will be built. Call now for a free copy of Will a Temple Soon Be Built in Jerusalem? And the follow-up booklet, The Abomination of Desolation. Both will be sent to you free of charge if you call 903-825-2525.
This Bible before me on the desk is a Middle Eastern book. It is a book that came from the days of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and very, very far beyond in history. It is a book in both its Old and New Testaments, not only of biblical history and genealogy, but of biblical prophecy. And the greatest prophet of all, believe it or not, was Jesus Christ of Nazareth. I've been talking about how the gospel is good news. And I have characterized it as Jesus Christ being like a newscaster, merely metaphor, merely by analogy, looking down beyond his time, into the time in which we live, and beyond the time in which we live, into the future. And he did so from a beautiful site overlooking one of the most famous skylines in all the world, except it was quite different then. Today you see the Dome of the Rock. And I have been over on the Mount of Olives and done television programs from over there on a number of occasions, and radio broadcasts and so on. And we've written articles and we've taken pictures. And like so many people, we have visited what many people call the Holy Land and gone to all of the important sites, biblical and otherwise. But what I want to tell you about is that the Olivet prophecy that Jesus delivered right there from the Mount of Olives is a step-by-step series of events that are actually your world news in advance. Let me show you one of the most poignant statements that Jesus ever made in that particular lengthy prophecy called the Olivet Prophecy of Matthew 24. It's in verse 15. When you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place, parenthetically, Matthew adds, whoso readeth, let him understand. Then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. He goes on to say, don't come back to take anything that belongs to you. If you're in the field, just get out of there. And in verse 21 and 2, some of the most awesome scriptures in the Bible, he says, for then shall be great tribulation. The 12th chapter and the first couple of verses of the book of Daniel say the same thing. A time of trouble such as there was not from the beginning of humanity on the earth until this time. Greater than all the wars in history combined. A time of what is called great tribulation such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be. And then the good news comes. And except those days should be shortened, cut short by divine intervention. God intervening to save mankind from himself, from his own hatred and tribal and group instincts, from his own wars, from all of the chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons that are extant today. Except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. Talking about the salvation of humankind, talking about the survival of every man, woman, and child on the face of this earth in a time of terrible war. That mankind will not be exterminated. He said, for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. Now, you're going to get a great deal of that when you get the information that I'm talking about. But here in a nutshell is what it meant. When he said, when you, he was talking to his disciples, shall see the abomination of desolation, stand in the holy place, all he had to do was turn their head. All he had to do was look over his shoulder. Because they were sitting across the Brook Kidron on the Mount of Olives, and right over there was the temple. And in the temple was the holy place. And inside the holy place was the Holy of Holies. Now, twice in history, actually several more times, if you go and look in some of the Bible encyclopedias and Bible history books, there have been wars which have completely destroyed the city of Jerusalem. Antiochus Epiphanes set up a statue of Jupiter Olympus. The armies of Titus came in there and sacrificed swine's blood and set up their standards, and there was complete desecration of the temple. It's been written up in history. It's happened several times. The temple of Solomon's day was utterly destroyed and reduced to rubble and leveled to the ground. It was not until they came back under Ezra and Zerubbabel and discovered in the rubble and the dust and dirt of all of the destroyed temple that they found the Torah, the law. Then there was another temple eventually built. And it was begun in those days, and it became the Herodian temple in which Jesus taught and when he cast the money changers out of the treasury. That temple was destroyed by the armies of Titus. Because Jesus said, the time is going to come when you will see something called an abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel in the holy place. And then when you put it together with 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter, that talks about a great false prophet called a man of sin who will sit in the temple of God claiming that he is God and will have the power to confuse and confound millions of people by apparently producing miraculous things like calling down fire from heaven. Let me tell you, there are hundreds of thousands of Christian evangelicals who believe that a third temple is going to be built. That's not my private opinion. That is the opinion of many groups. And as a matter of fact, in our break, when you see my son interviewing one of the leaders of the Temple Mount faithful who are saying that they're going to level these Arab mosques and they're going to build a temple right there, I mean, those are fighting words to the Palestinian Arabs and indeed to all Islamic fundamentalists all around the world. But that is the scenario that they see developing. Biblical prophecy says, and I'm sad to tell you, that peace is not going to break out during this next administration, during the time of Shimon Peres, or during the time of any follow-on government in Israel, not in the next 5 years, and probably not in the next 10 years. But eventually, because it's going to be brought not by man or by man's negotiations, or by various peacekeeping troops, or various demilitarized zones, or exchanging land for allegedly peace. The hatreds are too virile, and the protracted disgust and hatred of these people and the different religions that come in conflict and the different political parties that are there that are continually fighting and squabbling and warring is not good news for the Middle East anytime soon. But beyond that, there is good news because peace is going to come, but it's not going to be brought by man. Let me take another quick time out. Be sure to get this vital information I have for you. It's free of charge, and I'll be right back for some closing words.
Will a temple soon be built in Jerusalem? Bible prophecy clearly indicates that a Jewish temple will play a role in events that lead to the end time. But Islamic mosques currently occupy the Temple Mount.
The Temple Mount must be again as it was in the past. By the will of God, the third temple will be built again.
Will a third temple be built? It's destined to be one of the most explosive issues of our time. It would mean the dismantling or destruction of two shrines holy to the religion of Islam.
The third temple must be built on this place.
Where the Dome of the Rock sits.
Yes.
The Al-Aqsa Mosque is also in the way.
Yes.
And yet, Bible prophecy makes it plain that a third temple will be built. Call now for a free copy of Will a Temple Soon Be Built in Jerusalem? And the follow-up booklet, The Abomination of Desolation. Both will be sent to you free of charge if you call 903-825-2525.
Many students of Bible prophecy know that the Olivet prophecy is like an outline. It's like the plastic overlay through which you view all of the prophecies of the Bible. They know that you can't understand the mysterious book of Revelation, and you can't understand Daniel and the Revelation, and many biblical eschatologists understand that Daniel and the Revelation go hand in hand, that the one helps interpret the other because they have to do with sequential events that happen from the time of the ancient Babylonian kingdom all the way to the time of the interference of God and the second coming of Jesus Christ. Jesus said that there would be an abominable something that is hateful in God's sight. And 2 Thessalonians 2 seems to say that it's not only something of a material fashion or form or shape, such as something that is idolatrous, but also that there is a human being who is identified in the Bible as a great false prophet, a lying, hypocritical false prophet who is over a great religious movement and who actually sits in a temple of God, probably protected by a power from Central Europe, believe it or not. And when you look at all that we give you in the pages of 20th Century Watch in our Jerusalem Watch section, and you realize, for example, that the information minister with whom I spoke the last time I was in Israel was appointed as the ambassador to the Vatican, and that negotiations have gone on to actually recognize, for the first time in all history, because of the terrible anger that so many Jews felt over the alleged involvement of Pope Pius XII with Hitler and the extermination of so many Jews and a shipment of Jews to various camps all over Eastern Europe. The Jewish nation and the Jewish race generally has stayed as far away from the Vatican and the Roman Catholic Church as they could get. But yet in recent years there have been negotiations. Ambassadors have been exchanged. And the gentleman that I talked to is now the ambassador from Israel to the Vatican. Then we exposed that secret letter that was delivered to the Pope, and that negotiations were going on behind the scenes, where the foreign minister of Israel had suggested that some kind of Vatican control be given over the holy sites in the old city of Jerusalem, obviously a ploy to internationalize the city, to make it an open city, which the Pope has called for decades, corpus separatum, as he says in Latin, and to allow the people from all of the major monotheistics, from all of the faiths or the monotheistic religions, to have free flow, free access to the holy places without it being some kind of a political capital. Those negotiations have apparently been going on behind the scenes. Now, when you get the information I'm talking about, you will automatically be sent a free copy of the current number of 20th Century Watch, and that means you'll get the next issue as well, which will have an article following on with these events, not only a digest from all of the news in the world, this Newsweek, Time Magazine, all of them with a picture of Yitzhak Rabin on the cover, but you will get the perspective of biblical prophecy. You will get what the Bible says is going to happen in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years in the Middle East. I want you to get all three pieces of information that I'm offering you here. They're absolutely free of charge and no price, and they will really put you in the picture from the point of view of biblical prophecy as nothing else ever has. What did Jesus mean when he talked about a terrible abomination of desolation, or something that is abominable in God's sight that is going to result in terrible destruction? And will a temple soon be built in Jerusalem? There are those who urge that that be done. There are those who have been working for it. The Intifada, when they actually clamped down and refused and boycotted all of the Arabs and the Arab side and Hebron and the Gaza Strip and all of old Eastern Jerusalem for all of these many years, was triggered by an attempt by the man you saw my son interview, the Temple Mount faithful, who were marching to a place where they wanted to lay a symbolic cornerstone, maybe not the cornerstone of the actual building, but a symbolic cornerstone to begin to build a temple. And if you've read anything about the red heifer, if you've seen anything about the books, if you know that there are those who are actually collecting various vessels and garments for the priests that are trying to get ready in anticipation of the reestablishment of a kind of a Levitical priesthood and a temple with animal sacrifices in Jerusalem, well, then you know that this is real and that it's happening, that it's on the horizon. Also, as an historical gift, my interview with Prime Minister Rabin. You'll hear that deep voice very slowly expressing and explaining what his policies were and what he hoped to accomplish. It's all free of charge, no price, if you dial 903-825-2525. That's 903-825-2525, and I'll see you right here in 1 week.
For free literature and tapes, Australian listeners should write to Garner Ted Armstrong, Post Office Box 525, Cessna, New South Wales, 23252.